And welcome back to episode 5 of the Amateur Theatre Podcast. Today we're talking to Tom Wilson, a professional actor based in London. So a slightly different slant on our usual conversation, but he has been through drama school and has acted and worked in amateur theatre before turning professional. So he's got loads of interesting insights that cross over between the two different styles and different arenas in which he has kind of operated. We cover loads of stuff as normal. I do my standard drama school chat as I continue to try and be convinced of the merits of going to drama school, which I'm slowly being turned on the idea that it might actually be beneficial for various reasons. We talk about raw talent versus technical training and how those two work together and the synergies between them. We talk about failure, how to use that, how to deal with it. We touch on his prep for auditions and how he goes about creating a character, and he goes into more detail about characterization and the idea of not just playing the part but actually being it. So sit back and enjoy.
If you can't feel it, if you can't remotely fake it, do you know what I used to do on the days, on the 2% of the days that I really just couldn't get anything? I used to look at the lights, just not blink and stare into them until tears ran.
Okay, so I do want to quickly just attack drama school.
Yeah, okay.
And kind of year one, year two, kind of like give us a brief idea of what's going on behind those closed doors, and what amateurs may never come across and something they might be able to sort of utilize some of the skills. And then I'd like to sort of look at the structure of auditions, rehearsals and the show real quick, just to get an idea of how as an actor you're approaching those kind of three environments. Okay, so if we tackle drama school, and maybe give us an idea maybe of what year one looks like.
Well, yeah, I think you first year is all about simplifying it. They try to take away what a lot of people would call showing.
Okay.
You're not showing a part, you're being a part.
Right.
So, and again, different people will fit into different drama schools because they like certain things. There's no right or wrong, really. But for me, I liked Rose Bruford because it had a certain way of teaching and certain practitioners it followed. So the Meisner stuff, some of the earlier lessons that we do, a lot of Meisner is repeating. So if we were doing a Meisner exercise now, I would say, you've got a beard, you're holding your finger to your lips. And then you would go, I'm holding my finger to my lips. And I go, you're holding your finger to your lips. I'm holding my finger to your lips. And it's like a repetition exercise, which sounds god awfully boring, but they do just simple things like that.
But in order to what's that doing? What are those like activities?
Being in the moment.
Okay, so they're just taking away all the other
it's
stuff
taking
that's going
you
on.
Away. You stop you thinking. They try and stop you thinking, basically, about stuff. Right. Just fucking do it, but fuck up lots.
And what are they? What are they explicitly teaching you in terms of, like, I'm not trying to make it academic, but what are they teasing out of you? Like, are they watching those scenes and going, okay, you've not found the emotional core of that moment, here, try this? Or what's the kind of, what knowledge are they imparting upon you? Or is it just a free form, like, destruction of all the crap that they feel like you've picked up from?
Yeah, I think from a purely practical point of view, it's you realizing your worth as a person in a way. That sounds really deep, but realizing that what you have to give is unique and you don't have to be someone else. Just use what you already have.
Okay.
And you do go through a lot. You go through a lot of pain, and like some of the classes feel fucking long, like try and pretend to be wind for an hour and a half.
Man,
different types of wind and stuff, which now I'd fucking hate to do that now, but it is useful. I know it sounds bad, but just in terms of how you walk, you can add, you don't, I know everyone does it, but you can add it to characters. Like you might, like I said, I was talking about emotional and physical recall and things, but you might be in a scene that you just not get in a character, and someone might say to you, or you might suddenly decide, how can I look at it? Well, I'm going to look at this character as if he's an element. How would wind move through this scene? Which sounds right. Wanky. And animals are the same. Animal studies is a big thing in first year. So you have to be an animal as accurately as possible.
Yeah.
In your body, which is obviously impossible. But if you, a gorilla obviously might be technically easy to be, because we're fairly, our anatomy is very similar to an ape, but they would then be very picky on mouth movements, eye movements. So you'd have to present that, be the animal, which again is very tiresome and long. Sounds fun in the beginning, but after a while it gets really boring. And then slowly they work it up in percentages. Or what we did was, so now you're 10% human, 90% animal, 20% right. human, until you're 90% human, 10% the animal.
Okay.
Which I don't know how often it's used in films and things these days, but in theatre, since I've learned that, and I might be wrong, it might be me reading into it, but I've seen characters before and I've gone, he's moving like an aardvark.
Right.
as it gets more complex throughout the year, you're given goals and objectives, but it's all about you. You're never acting a character. It's all about what you're doing, you acting genuinely in that moment. So things like, it's a really fun one to do, but like everyone watches you, and it's like a bedroom getting ready exercise. So they encourage you to bring as much shit from your bedroom in as you can. So people literally, other than bringing a bed in, people used to bring cars full of stuff. So you'd have your mattress and you'd put it on the table where your bed would be, and you set it up as if it's your room in a corner, in a hall. You're given a set amount of time. So the tutor will say, like, right, you've got 10 minutes and you've got to do boom, boom, boom in 10 minutes before you can leave your room. But you're always given an objective, which is like a play, isn't it? So they're building you up to working on a play, because you're a character, you, in your bedroom, you've got a set, you've got obstacles in the way, where you've got to get dressed before you go out, you've got a... It could be really mundane things, though, like you've got to finish writing a poem that you're writing, or whatever it is. You've got to pack... Another one, that popular one was packing like a suitcase for a trip to see your parents or something. And then they just talk about it afterwards. So it's just a reflection. But people then will pick it apart and say, well, would you actually do that in that circumstance? Like, is that how... And you kind of, it fucks your head, because you're like, because people are commenting on it as well. You're like, would I do that? Is that how I would behave? And it's all about, at the time, it fucks your head and you think, oh, this is messed up maybe. And you think that you're being shit because you did something wrong. There's no right or wrong. And that's kind of what they're trying to get at. They just want you to have a purpose and do it as believably as possible.
Okay.
And
what the idea is, that context then is the most naturalistic for you, because it's your bedroom and it's an activity that you do every day. So that by using that as a starting off point, it's difficult to escape it being natural and you doing things naturalistically.
Yeah. And obviously it's unnatural because it's not. But that's what acting is. You're being natural you're on a stage, for fuck's sake, in front of hundreds of people, whatever.
Yeah.
So it creates a lot of depth. So a lot of the first year drama school is exploring those kind of things. But it does fuck with your head. And I think that's the advice I'd give first year, is just try not to overthink it. Because you have so much going through your head, like I said about the competition and going, oh, I've got to be the best actor. First year is the year where you must not. You've got loads of time to think about competing with people. It's that the first year is the year to fail.
Right.
Lots.
Mm-hmm.
And they do tell you that. Make mistakes, but be bold, be brave.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how the drama schools, again, that'd be a great topic to talk about, how those schools kind of look at their students, whether they're looking for students that are just, give me your 30 grand for your 3-year course.
Yeah.
We obviously have this training package that we want to, you know, we want you to do well at, but actually we know, and you secretly know, even though you're not prepared to admit it, that when you leave, one in 5,000 of you, or whatever the silly stat is, probably even higher than that, yeah, will be able to make a living from acting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like,
interestingly, I mean, we get previous students in, but all the previous students that would come in were people that were kind of, they weren't high flying celebrities because they were too busy, obviously, the people that were
working.
Yeah, too busy working. But they would get people who were successful. So people who were still doing like shows in the West End, they might be in this play with Sienna Miller or something, but they're, yeah, you know, they're a speaking part, but they're not like huge stars, but it's still getting well paid in the West End for whatever. So they were the kind of people we'd get in. And they kind of, to me, I viewed them as like, well, they have, even though they're not superstars, they've kind of made it, like they're doing really good work. And even that is hard to get into what they're doing, yeah, straight out of drama school. But I always thought, oh, it would actually be really helpful to have people who were struggling a bit come in. I know that's probably not what the school wants to sell, because no, of course, they're like, well, look, you can be successful, but not struggling, but people who,
well, the reality of it, the real world,
yeah, the reality, yeah, yeah, exactly, because that is, like I said, 90% of the actors in the world are in the situations that I've been in for most of my career, and
that makes total sense, because then you get the reality of the fact that I do wonder how they, because what you just said is really interesting, because if you're getting people back in who, okay, they might not be famous, but they're working regularly.
Yeah.
That's not the truth of it. What you want is someone who got a job 3 months ago and has been auditioning ever since.
Exactly. Unless you're one of the very select few in that year group, that's going to be life for you. You're going to be the one that goes to 20 auditions and don't get a job straight out of drama school.
Yeah. Well, and do you go in knowing that as an actor who, you know, through school and through maybe a foundation or whatever you might have done,
yeah,
do you apply for drama school, get in knowing that the stats are so high, the chances are, or are you the one, maybe do you feel like you're the one that's going to make it? Or, and I have a follow up question, which is, yeah, I'll insert real quick. Is your perception of it just luck? Like, is Eddie Redmayne, I know he's good, right? But mm-hmm, are there 50 Eddie Redmaynes training now, and Eddie Redmayne was just the one that got chosen, did the right movie, and then made a friend, and, or is his dad a producer? You know, what's your feeling of those top tier actors? How's the?
Okay, so come to that one in a minute. So the first question was,
are you going in blind?
Blind. So when I went to drama school, maybe it's because I didn't look into the statistics and things, and I think probably a lot of people didn't, because I don't remember people really talking about it when we first went to drama school. But the whole statistics of, I can't remember what the exact number is, it's around 90% of actors at any one time are not acting. And that's every actor. There's a lot of actors, but like that statistic, I didn't learn until I left drama school, in a book that I read.
Nice. I don't think they're going to tell you at drama school though, right?
Sorry?
They're not going to tell you at drama school. When you're there, they're not going to go, did you know, guys?
Exactly. I mean, I can't remember exactly. I mean, they may have as we got later on into our training, but to begin with, I don't think it was really mentioned. And me, certainly, I mean, you're off that high of getting into drama school. I'm not going to gloss over it. That on itself is an achievement, because the amount of people that apply for drama school, so many people audition for drama school, like just my I went through
and over and over again as well, like lots, yeah, of people do it 4 times.
Yeah, it took me three years to get onto the course I wanted to.
Yeah, which is mental,
so it's incredibly competitive, if nothing else. So yeah, getting into drama school, you kind of are on that buzz, because you're like, oh my God. And they make that at drama school. They make that a big thing. The first thing they tell you, there's 30 of you in your year or whatever. And they say that you're already ahead of like 10,000 people or something. So they make a big thing of that because obviously they want you to feel good about yourself, and then they go about breaking you. No, they're very much in the beginning. They're like, you're lucky to be here. Don't mess it up, basically. You know, don't waste your opportunity. You're lucky, you know, you're lucky for you. So but everybody feels like they're in competition with the other person.
Oh, really? Okay. A good there. Competition or a, this well, is, say, I better be better than you because I want the job competition.
A bit of that, but also you just want to be, you want to be the best actor in your year. You just do.
Okay.
Whatever that is. This is what I'm talking about. Like, because mine was part of a degree. I got a degree with my drama school, but not all drama schools do. But on a degree, they're judging you by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They're marking you, aren't they? How do you mark acting? How do you mark a piece of painting, really? Piece of artwork, sculpture, whatever it is. So that's in the back of your mind. So you're kind of like going, well, I need to get 10 out of 10 for this performance, when 10 out of 10 doesn't really exist. And that kind of defeats the whole point of being an artist, because especially when you're learning your trade, which everybody is at drama school, you've got to be able to do something awfully to know that's awful. And, you know, and they do encourage that at drama school, don't get me wrong. They're like, you need to make mistakes to, you know, failure is your friend, which all actors should bear in mind. But you hope that by the time you get out of the rehearsal or the training, that you're a bit more polished and ready to go and perform.
Yeah.
You know? But I think everybody's in competition with each other, definitely to begin with. That self-realization, you're like, oh shit, well, I need to be, I'm special in a way. You kind of have that thought in your head, and you're like, I'm going to go on and I'm going to be famous. This is it. Or not famous, but I'm going to go on and be successful. You know, I've got a good chance now. I've already made such a big jump.
Okay, so so prior to that then, are you just thinking, I love acting, so I'm going to do a course? Are you just kind of like...
Well, going into it.
Yeah, like, you see, just what you just described is like, it seems like a realization that actually, shit, I could make it.
Yeah.
Like drama school seemed, from what you described, drama school, the first thing they're implanting in your brain is, okay, here you are, you could make it. I'm saying, prior to that, are you like, I kind of like this. I've got a talent. I don't know where it could take me, but.
I used to hate acting. I got cast when I was about 10 in like primary school play as the lead or whatever it was we were doing. And I was excited about it. But then about a week before, I was like, I can't do it. So I learned all the lines and everything, and I stopped because I was too scared. I didn't want to do it. So
really,
my mum was like, "Get it," because the school just had to put someone else in to read.
Sure.
I didn't come from that kind of background at all. I was a very nervous kid and no confidence really. So it was something that developed much later in life when I was about 15, 16. But you get people who have been doing it all their life, and I suppose they do, I think, blindly think, oh, I've been doing this since I was 2, I must be great. But then they'll meet someone who has decided to do acting in the last 6 months, who, I don't know, was perhaps in the army, and suddenly they just got so much more life experience or something, and they come in and they do a monologue and they're like, be able to break down crying in the monologue and find that sort of thing so easy, that sort of raw, natural quality that perhaps they don't have. They might not be trained, which is why I think training is important, because you need to be sharpened and think of it as a performance piece. You know, you hear about it all the time, don't you, about kids and people who have been found from all different walks of life who are not acting, and they put in astonishing performances because they've got that raw emotion, the raw talent for it. Doesn't mean they're well trained. There's a difference, I think.
And what is your view on that as a concept that can't be overcome? That there are some people that can just, well, shit, I've got two questions. But there are some people who can just present the truth of the character naturally. They just somehow, for some reason, they appear, they do a monologue, and you're like, this person is great. What's your view on that, and what you've seen out in the real world and through drama school? And what's your kind of, I mean, the follow on was, we'll feed us back in, hopefully, but what what can someone who maybe hasn't got that do?
It is experience, and you can't just buy that, and yeah. You can't just learn that. You can listen to other people's experiences and be prepared, but I think until you go through the things that you go through, that's what gives it you. So yeah, just as my first tip.
Yeah. Okay. No. Which is actually really good, because that will let someone who maybe is failing or feels like they're not performing their best pieces straight away. Yeah. You might give them some encouragement to say, look, get 5 shows under your belt, or 5 auditions, or 5 rehearsal periods, and you'll feel a lot better.
Especially as an amateur actor who hasn't gone to drama school, who is trying to become, or even trying to get into drama school, the more you do, the better you're going to be, hopefully.
Yeah, and you said it right at the top, that whatever that fail little...
Yeah.
What was that thing you said about failure? Enjoy failure, or whatever it was?
Just embracing failure and not being afraid of it, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So rather than allowing you to get away with just saying experience, how does that translate into how you're acting? What is it that experience represents, or how does it manifest itself in your performance?
So something you can use as a tool for wherever you are in your life of acting, and you want to be an actor, you have to draw on yourself. That is your muse, if you like, because how can you? I think I've seen a lot of amateur performances, and I think where a lot of amateur performances go wrong is because they're trying to replicate a performance they've seen. Yeah. Not saying they're copying.
No, I get you, yeah.
Yeah, you know, someone who's seen Hamlet and they've seen it done amazingly by, I don't know, David Tennant or whoever, and they think that was amazing. Of course, you're inspired as an artist, as an actor, by other actors. But if you go in and try and be that, I think it stinks in terms of, not that you're being trying to be genuine with the performance, but it stinks of this person. This isn't them doing the role, so to speak. I think that's where a lot of amateur actors go wrong sometimes. Not saying all of the time.
No, as a general thing.
So I used to do it.
I've held enough auditions and put on enough plays to recognize someone who's auditioning for, you know, whatever it is, Twelfth Night, who came to the rehearsal, or sorry, came to the audition and was like, I'm going to do Stephen Fry as Malvolio. Enjoy. Yeah. You know, and it's like, yeah, but...
And you go, great, that's a great impression.
Yeah.
But an impression is very different to a performance. I think a director, correct me if I'm wrong, you've had a lot of experience directing, but you don't want someone to come in and play the part. You want someone to be the part.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a really good point. So, and I'm going to press you for a more in-depth answer. What is being the part? What is the difference? Because there clearly is a difference, and I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. But putting your finger on that as an amateur, it might be slightly harder to understand what you're saying, and it, you know, because they haven't been challenged on that enough. You know, they've probably been cast in a number of plays by replicating a performance, and maybe across various different characters as well, using the same tricks that they've got in different parts to get roles. Yeah. So what is it to actually be, rather than to kind of mimic?
Well, yeah, it's again a hard thing to answer, I suppose, because you have to, everybody's different, but I think you have to have like you have to be vulnerable. You have to have a vulnerability about you, which isn't a nice thing, because the whole idea of acting is that you've got to be an open, vulnerable vessel to channel stuff when you're being watched by hundreds, not even hundreds of people, but sometimes just in a room in an audition when you've got 2 people. That's just as awkward as having 1,000 people watch you be vulnerable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
I would probably say it's worse. So
especially because they're specifically judging you as well. The audience are judging you, but within the context of the play, those 2 people are judging you, your character, your performance, your choices, they're really like.
Yeah. And you just have to give no shits, because, and this is why I was talking about the whole, there's a technical side of acting and there's a talent rawness of acting, and you kind of have to have two to be a good actor, I think.
Okay.
Which is why Giant Drama School helps define the rawness of you. It's harder, I think, going to drama school if you've got all the defined skills, if you're not ready to be vulnerable, open, and access your emotions, if you're a bit, you know, closed up, that is hard. Even though you've got all the technical skills you've learned from National Youth Theatre, I think that's harder to go into drama school. I would rather go to drama school. Having that rawness in real life can be told how to make that look bigger on stage or smaller on camera.
Yeah, so, okay, no, I like that.
That's easier, I think, to do that.
Yeah, so actually, that's really interesting. So to refine and to kind of, well, not refine and then enhance rawness, vulnerability is a lot easier than trying to manifest vulnerability and rawness when it's not there.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, which is, okay, that's...
both of those things, even in professional performances, happen, and at a drama school, it's a mixed bag of that, I think. You get the people who are very emotional and raw. Some people sort of sit in the middle. But then there's the people who are very good at the technical side of things, but then they sometimes find it hard to express and release and be open.
Okay, so this is great. So what I'd like to do then is ask you, if you can, to discuss, or maybe you've never done it, or maybe you have done it, but just consider what the raw talent requires. So to get to a point where the raw talent is shining through, and also to get to a point where the technical skills are honed, so that you get that, what you just mentioned, that crossover, and you get that kind of, the synergy between the two is at the peak. How are you in your, and again, as you said before, you know, you're still doing stuff to get better, and you never give up on loving performing and learning stuff. But what, on the journey towards getting that like peak synergy, how would you say from, I mean, again, we can take you back to your 15-year-old self here, maybe, how do you learn those two things and bring them both up? And again, I keep adding like 20 questions onto the one question, but
no.
The people I've been talking to, some say you just have this raw talent and you can be amazing, and there it is, you can't learn that. By the sounds of it to me, you're saying that might exist, but you can actually learn to be vulnerable and to show a rawness and to bring that experience to the performance. And I'm presuming that given that there's 30,000 drama schools in the UK, you can be taught the technicals. So, yeah, what's your feeling on
yeah, so you're, yeah, what, yeah, I suppose what, yeah, what it sounds like I'm saying is that anybody can learn the technical side of it.
Yeah.
With some degree of ease, the more you repeat it, the practice it, you can be taught those things.
Yeah, you got to put the work in there, right? I'm not saying
Yeah, and you have to know what you're doing and apply it. And now I think there is a grey area where just very top actors have that grey area where those two are kind of yin and yang. They kind of float with each other because they don't think about, I'm going to move my hand in this sort. They just happens because they've had that practical training,
right?
And they pair it with how they feel as the character, and those two things just exist. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's kind of the eternal bliss of acting. And when you know, I think you. I'm going to contradict everything about acting now, but you kind of know, you can feel those moments, I think, when you're an actor. You can also be fucking completely wrong. You can also feel it and then someone go, that was fucking awful. So this is what I mean. It's all fucking opinionated, and people can tell you something shit and you can feel like you absolutely nailed it emotionally. But
yeah,
that shouldn't be give up. It just means a director wants it slightly different, basically.
Yeah.
Because of their taste.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, look, I've used the word subjective many times when talking to people. It is very subjective. I you know, there's no getting away from the fact that one director does want to see a specific thing. And there are some directors out there who will make you redo it and redo it and redo it, even in the amateur world, until you get that one thing they want to see. And if you don't deliver on that, then...
This is it. I mean, you have to be, as an actor, you have to be so resilient. It's a horror. I don't know why anybody wants to do it because... No, I don't, because we're taught as adults. This is part of what I did my dissertation on at drama school. But as adults, you're taught to be grown up, and you from day dot really. There's a very small period of your life where you're encouraged to play and have imagination. As soon as you go into even going to primary school, those things are. But you're slowly becoming an adult. Every year of school, you're becoming an adult, and emotions and reacting emotionally, whereas obviously, and as an actor, your skill is to be able to tap into those instincts and those human emotions, but when called upon. And there's a reason that we become adult and become grown up, I think, because it protects us, it stops us being emotional wrecks, and you can't always look vulnerable in life because you go in meet a manager at a job or something. You can't, you know.
Well, but people take advantage of it as well. If people see you're totally vulnerable, they'll step in and go, this guy's a...
Yeah, but Mike, but... And I think you'll agree with me on this. I think... interviewing for jobs, like I'm trying to go into teaching and things now. So I've been for a few interviews for things, and I deliberately... don't let myself be too grown up.
Okay, that's a fine line to walk, my friend. The one thing I know about outside of amateur theatre is how to interview for business stuff. Because yeah, go on.
No, what I mean is
you do conform in some ways.
Yeah, I've got exactly. I'm not going in like but do you know what I mean? Having that, I'm quite vulnerable and. There's nothing wrong with admitting in any form of life your weaknesses and what you're good at, and you're not. Also, there's nothing wrong with telling people what you're good at. And when I do an interview or I meet somebody new, I like to think that I do that. And I'm not just interview, but if I'm talking to a customer, if I'm working in a shop or whatever it has been, why can't you be open? And a lot of us are guarded because we see what other people do, and someone might be very like. Stern and but that's them, doesn't mean you can't be you. Your brain will hopefully find some equilibrium in how you behave. I'm not making any sense.
Because I can see a way of tying it back to how someone listening to this might benefit from what you've just said, is that if you're allowing yourself to be like stifled by the world that you live in, or you're conforming so much to like the rigid structures that, as you say, in society, in work, in how you interact with other adults, in how you kind of what the perception of you is, and you are affected by that.
Yeah.
What you're actually doing is you're pushing down that one of the key tenets of being a very good actor, which is that rawness and vulnerability. And so to bring it back up, you've got to work triple hard.
Yeah.
Because it's been pushed down so much by, as you say, all the stuff that you go through in your daily life, which is really interesting. It's the first time it's come into my head in just talking to you about it now, is that maybe as a professional actor, one of the big differences is that you're allowed to have it, you're allowed to wear it on your sleeve kind of thing. You're allowed to have it out there much more often than an amateur actor is, in that your daily life is to be like that. The people you're interacting are expecting to see those vulnerabilities, whereas as an amateur actor, it's all covered. It's all like until Tuesday night when you're going to your audition for whatever the next thing you're doing is. You then have to drag it back out
from normal life. Yeah,
from normal life and pick through all the shit and then
Yeah, it's, you're absolutely right. But yeah, so using what I'm trying to say is use that as an actor, you it's not like if you want to be a professional footballer, you can go home and practice keepy uppies for 5 hours a day or whatever you want to do. If you're an actor, you can't really go home and practice monologues.
I mean, you can, but the benefit can. Is less and less. It's a yeah.
And someone can go, you can learn something perfectly exactly how you want to do it in a monologue, and the director can go, nah, shit, I want you to do it like this. So yeah. In a way, practice it. So I think practicing acting.
That's quite a good analogy, by the way. Like, sorry, I'm about to interrupt your thought. But no, that's quite a nice analogy in that you can practice acting. Like, you can stand in front of a mirror. You can perform a monologue 50 times.
Yeah.
As you can with a football, you can kick it in a goal 50 times. But when you get on the pitch, if that ball goes in the net, no one can say it's not a goal. As in, they can't. You know what I mean? Like, it's a goal. Yeah. You scored. Whereas acting, you could do that. And then you go to the first director and he goes, nah.
Yeah.
Or she goes, nah.
Yeah. It's nowhere where I want it to be. Yeah, of course. And that can obviously be upsetting as an actor, which is why you have to have the tough skin to be able to go. And you have to have the ability. And this is what I mean, I think. You have to be vulnerable to be able to do that. You have to give it everything. Practice for an audition. Practice a monologue, how you want to do it. But then be prepared to go and do it completely differently.
Okay.
Which is a hard thing to do. And it's just something you learn. And adapt. So you just have to be open, and there's no way you can prepare for it. You have to be confident enough in your own ability, and I think in auditions you have to not give a shit, and you have to go, because otherwise you'll make yourself a nervous wreck, and you're going to be nervous anyway regardless. I don't care what anyone says, you're gonna have a bit of nerves and excitement because you just do, but you have to try and strip that down as much as possible.
Okay. So finding the truth of a character that's your truth, not the directors, not the casting directors, not the
David Tennant's,
not exactly, not some other actor's truth. Your truth of it is something that's really key for an amateur and a professional, but any actor to understand. My question to you is, like, what was the process to get there? And I know you might just say, well, I just felt it. It was just there. But there must have been some choices. You must have made some choices as you kind of, okay, so you get told that this is an audition that you can go to, and, you know, this is the play. You pick a character from that play. How did you approach that audition that allowed you to find yourself at the point of standing in front of them going, this is it. This is the truth of it.
Yeah,
you might, as you say, you might not like it, but.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a lot. And some of these things you obviously learn from if you've been taught them or studied certain practitioners and things, which is why, you know, you can talk about method acting as a method and, you know, Stanislavski, Meisner. But a few of the things I did, there were choices I made. So, because you also have to read the play, right?
That's what I was going to say. Can we break it down even further? Are you reading the play before you do it?
Okay. Looking at it from an artistic point of view and going, I know a director comes to these terms as well, and you come to those together when you're doing the show, but in an audition you have to make those calls.
Yeah.
So I went, no, to me. And you have to be like, I'm giving you now, like I would if a director will sometimes say, why did you play it like that, or how do you see Macduff? You have to be able to go, you have to know the play and know your character well enough to go, I see him like this, because then it backs up your performance, hopefully.
And
the director can go, okay, I can see where they're going with that. Going into Macduff in this particular circumstance, I was like, well, he is pretty much has to be, in my view, was the antithesis of Macbeth. So I decided he was going to be very still, very low center of gravity, very heavy. I can be quite an energetic, erratic energy on stage, and I've got quite a youthful energy, I think, and he's someone that in my head he did show his emotion. He was a very, very emotional man, but he kind of controls it,
he's very stoic.
Which doesn't mean you don't show emotion, because you could go and do Macduff and be like, I'm stoic. And so I just stood there, did it in complete stillness.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, that, just to pull that point out very quickly. So, you know, again, anyone who is listening might be able to investigate it further themselves, like pausing and being silent.
Oh, powerful.
Powerful. Yeah, yeah. You have to you have to understand that you don't have to be moving around and making noise all the time.
No. And that's what a lot of, I think certainly amateur actors are seen, think that movement is power because it's energy and you feel like you have to be doing something because you're on stage. No. And it was a and it was a middle of a monologue and it was no other, I think that one line gets delivered. And then I left it a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What would feel if you were out of yourself, look, if you were acting and feeling as an actor, you would feel God standing here being silent for, it probably was only maybe 20 seconds, maybe not even that. But it obviously, if you're thinking about it, it makes it feel like, it feels like 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, everyone can relate to that. But because I was in the character, I was like, I'm not going to speak until I feel strong enough as that character to say something.
Okay, that's nice.
My next line. If that makes sense.
So yeah, it's good.
An impulse. And it was clear, because other people might go, oh yeah, but what if they think that you've forgotten your line or something? They'd know if you've forgotten your line. You know if you've forgotten your line because you look terrified and you're staring into space. But which was essentially what I was doing. But this is where like the knack of the trick of the trade, you know, you have, obviously you can't look down at that moment. As on stage, it's not captured by a camera. The audience want to see your face. They want to see you react to it. So that feels a bit unnatural, but that's again, something you can learn, I think, as an actor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, me standing there, having all those emotions running through me for that 20, 30 seconds, how do I then feel those emotions? Because you obviously have to connect to the character. You can't go in there. If you're playing the character, like we talked about earlier, like copying another person, you might do something with your face or pretend that you're being hurt.
It's too on the surface. It needs more depth.
Yeah.
So that when moments like that come, because you can't subconsciously think the things that your face is going to do, or your left hand might move to your side. It might feel incongruous with what you're doing. If you're copying or mimicking, it's all very surface.
It looks fake. Looks fake.
Well, it might pass for a bit, but there'll be a moment where.
Yeah. And I have a point I want to go to in a minute on faking it, because faking it is also important to an extent, which might be controversial, but something an actor tutor told me at drama school. Go on to it a sec. But you can only, and standing there, you would know if you're feeling what that character's feeling, or to any extent what that character's going through, if you're thinking about what that character's thinking, like I said, that pause will come and end naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're doing it. You won't even think about, oh, should I leave it a bit longer? It just happens. Or it did for me. And again, it's not an easy thing to do. I'm not pretending, you know, that is where the trick of acting comes in, I guess. But and then I was like, well, so in my work building up to the audition, I was like, well, where am I going to get this from? So different people have different methods. You can either look at, you know, Stanislavski, blah, blah, blah. You can look at method acting. For me, the way I was taught and the way and again, different actors would be different, but for me, my approach that worked for me was what we studied at Rose Bruford, which was Sanford Meisner.
Mm-hmm.
And he always believed that actors, if you're an actor, you need to have a good imagination. Let's just give that as a given, yeah? If an actor, you've got a good imagination. So you should be able to imagine stuff, right? He said that if you're trying to get some kind of emotion, whether it's crying, whatever it is, you can't use your real life, because which is a lot of what a lot of actors do. And you think back, like, so for example, somebody, I'm hoping nobody's had their wife and children slaughtered, but let's
someone has somewhere, but
yeah, of course, but hopefully they won't be anywhere near playing Macduff, hopefully, because that's very dangerous. But you can still be very close. And I think it's dangerous to be, and it becomes them therapy, which you don't want. Acting shouldn't be therapy, I don't think. There's therapeutic parts of it, but it shouldn't be therapy, and which is why I think method acting goes a bit weird. But you have to be able to. I'm lucky enough that I have a strong enough imagination to imagine that, but I could then walk off the stage and go, oh, thank God, that's not real. Even if I was an emotional, even if I was bawling my eyes out, yeah. I could still go away from that and go, that's not real.
Yeah,
so it wasn't dangerous.
So what's really interesting about that is just, I mean, obviously that's a skill to be able to do that. And if it draws out an amazing performance, then it definitely should be a resource.
You're asking if you can't do that, what do you do?
No, not at all.
I have an answer for that as well.
Oh, do you? Well, you can offer that answer up. No, I wasn't going to ask that. I was just going to say, like, it's interesting to in my mind, sort of pontificate as to whether an amateur actor is prepared to do that, whether they have to be prepared to do that, or whether the stakes are high enough for them to make the choice to start.
But the stakes have to be high, don't they? Do they not?
No. So
always.
Let me.
That's why acting is.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So maybe I should
say it.
Yeah. So maybe I should reframe that. In order to reach the level that you might aspire to reach.
Yeah.
People should listen to that and say that has to be a resource or a tool in my toolbox that I might have to go to at some point. I just wonder if amateur actors don't realize that. Don't realize that if you, you know, as you say, it may be something that you learn from your degree, and therefore people should take note and say, look, actually, maybe what you've just described, you don't use it every time or you don't whatever, but it's actually a resource that you should begin to consider as a tool.
I think so. I think.
And the Macduff example is probably a really good one, because that's the peak of where, you know, death of a family.
Well, yeah, it does get more dramatic than that. Really.
Yeah, yeah. So people haven't got to worry that they've always got to be thinking about their dead wife.
No, I mean, this is level out of 10, yeah. Was a level 12 circumstance, yeah, yeah. Obviously, that he's dealt with. And but even if it's love or infatuation that you're playing with a character, you have to play it level 10 at least, because
yeah, no, which is important for people to hear, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Even if you're amateur, you have to aim for that. You might not get it, but you have to aim for it. And when I say level 10, I don't mean, again, it's knowing maybe sometimes tricks of the trade and a technical ability, but I don't mean if you're going to be in love with someone, don't, you're not like, oh,
that's it's not, it's not all physical and all.
Yeah. It doesn't have to manifest itself physically.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be remiss of me or irresponsible not to just ask you how you, as you come off stage, deal with that, like the venting of that emotion that you've built up. What's, like, is there a thing that people just have to realize that, you know, it's just imagination. We've just made this up. Don't worry about it. Because I can see some people spiraling, like even not taking on the method approach to it and thinking of their real granny that died last week.
Yeah.
But they, you know, I've seen amateur actors respond in very interesting ways just to, you know, basic emotional scenes. So what would you say? Is there a quick thing that you could say that maybe that, you know, is it just realizing prior to doing the scene that this is made up? So you know that, but then when you get on stage, you have to utilize the emotional response to it. And then when you come off again, you can then say, don't forget.
Yeah. Okay. So I think being an actor, you have to be interested in people and human emotions, right?
Okay.
In psychology, I think you have to be, why would you act? I don't think you act. I think that's my reason for acting, because I'm interested in human beings and I like just to understand people. And when you play a character, it's understanding a person and how people react, right?
Yeah.
So
how How did you, in the performance, sort of dissipate that emotion? Did you just come off stage and you just were able to say, ah, oh, this was, don't worry, Tom, that was just you acting? Or what was the kind of...
Well, I mean, in that circumstance, I was helped out a little bit by the running at the end of the scene, because the rest of that scene was him, right, come on, I've got to pull myself together. This is going to give him a clear direction now. By the end of the scene, me and Malcolm, we're going to go fucking kill Macbeth.
Right.
So that's where that emotion drove me to that. So when I came off stage, I was pumped and felt emotionally full, but it wasn't that distraught place because that character had quickly not gotten over it, but had turned it into something else.
Okay. So
for that particular part.
Yeah. Okay. So that's useful.
I know what I was going to say now. Sorry.
No, crack on.
So part of getting those emotions as well, finding those emotions, you've got the imagination, which is, goes back to my thing about saying, what do you do if you can't feel it, right? If the thought of your dead uncle, your imaginary dead uncle or whatever, isn't triggering anything, you kind of have to eventually you go into faking it, because that's what
okay.
you do if you're not skilled enough or not practiced enough in it or whatever. But another massive thing that's helpful, and I think you have to do along with imagination, is a physicalization of what happens. So everyone cries. I'm using crying as an example because that was what I was doing technically. Everybody has an emotion, gets into that emotional state at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as an actor, as an amateur actor, I would say, and there is a practitioner that says this, this isn't just me saying it, but
claim it, Tom. You should claim it.
I think it might be Stanislavski. It's all Meisner. It's one of the two. But you have to be, or Uta Hagen. Do you know Uta Hagen? She's written loads of books. German actress. Old name. Anyway, I think it might have been her. But she was like, you have to, as an actor, if you want to be an actor, you have to observe. You have to be aware of your emotions all the time, because that's you. That's you as a person, and that's what acting is. You're bringing you to a character, right?
Yeah.
So everything that you go through, you should be able to then kind of replicate through a character in some way using
imagination. Oh, so you're creating a pool of like emotional responses that you can then.
Yes, emotional responses. And so when I was thinking about it, sometimes the imagination alone of that happening was fine, and it was, and that's what I went with originally, and that made me really upset, and it made me cry if I was really focused on it. But obviously, actors, we're all human. We can't always be focused. Sometimes we're not on our game. It happens. So then what do you do if the imagination alone, you still have to try and focus on those things and think about those things. But what if that doesn't evoke the response you want it to? So you think about physically. So what do you do when you cry, for example? Next time you're crying, actors listening, or whatever the state is, wherever you're laughing, notice the physical response your body's having.
Okay.
What do you do with your hands? What do you do with your face? What do you do with your breathing? Practitioners will say that all the time anyway. Breathe, firstly. But breath changes how you feel more than anything. Think when you're nervous, you're happy, you're crying, you're laughing. Your breath is vastly different on all of those things. So for something extreme like crying, I would think about what my body does when I cry. And I've had lots of experience in that through those girlfriends.
All that grief.
Yeah, but you do. And I know actors are like self-pitying or whatever, or self indulgent, but I think when you're in those emotions, I think that's okay if you feel safe to. Obviously, in real life, I think I've been in those emotions where I'm still crying about something. I may have gotten over what, but I'm still upset about something. And I do, because I've got my actor brain on sometimes because I'm psychotic. I would just go, well, how is this? Just noticing what my body's doing when I'm not saying make notes and start acting like when you're crying, but just mentally taking note of what you do. Or mm-hmm. even if you don't, if you're thinking about an emotional scene, just sit there and think, okay, last time I cried, think about that. And try not to think, obviously, about the stimulus to it necessarily, but
yeah.
think about, okay, what do I do when I cry? And people are different as well. Do I wring my arms? Do I scratch my face? What is it? Because those will give you an emotional response.
Okay.
They will do. They'll help.
Well, no, it's like muscle memory. Like if your body starts feeling you're doing the things that you do when you cry, your brain starts saying, hold on, am I crying? What's going on?
Exactly. So I think it helps. But again, it doesn't always work. And you can try and pair those two, the emotional imagination, which I've talked about, and pair it with physical and muscle memory, as you like to call it. I like to call it. But sometimes that also isn't enough and you just have to go. You have to really try with those things. But sometimes you'll be going, nothing's coming. It's just not my day. And you just have to accept that, in which case you do that scene as believably as you can feel, if that makes sense.
Well, I think maybe the key point of all the things you just said over the last like 5 or 10 minutes is that it's not, obviously all the stuff about how you do that is really important, whether you're taking the emotional responses from everyday life and memorizing them, whether you're, you know, you're finding the small pieces of things that trigger it.
Yeah. But
as an amateur who hasn't heard any of this before, the key is understanding that you need to create that pool, that resource, and channel it. You've got to learn to find it wherever it is,
yeah,
and just draw a little line from that resource or that pool,
yeah,
to your mouth and to your body, so that it drip feeds in when you're doing that thing.
Yeah,
and that's a different thing. Like that's something that amateurs may not know. They'll know like, oh, I need to cry here. I've got to think of something really emotional. But also they have to understand that within that, as you said, there's a number of other constituent parts that form part of the whole that they have to channel. It's not just wailing and throwing their arms in the air, because that's the stereotypical response to hearing that someone's just shot your dog. You know, there's a whole level of other stuff that if you haven't thought about it prior to that moment, you're not going to give a realistic response to.
Of course not. And can I just say as well on that point, making it, you have to, all acting is about responding in the moment, right? So because you're trying to be that character when you're on stage, that should be that character, whether you've done it a million times or not. You should be behaving as if this is the first time it happens. That's what you should try to be doing, which is, I know, hard when you know the lines off by heart, but that's what you're recreating. If you're thinking about, what am I doing as an actor, people want to see this as if it's happening now, it's real.
Yeah,
that's what we want, right? So there's no point, because I used to think about this a lot in that scene with Malcolm, for example. There's no point thinking, oh God, that character's coming on in 5 minutes with that news and I've got to try and emotionally get there so that when he comes on I can cry. Okay. Which I think a lot of the actors would do,
right?
And this is very hard, I'm not saying this is easy, but that's what a lot of actors would do, and that could potentially ruin or cloud what's going on before that.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole scene with Malcolm could be messy or not as clear as it could be. You have to, whatever your action, if you do actions or whatever your motive is, whatever your goal is in the scene, you have to fully go with that until something comes on and changes it. And when something comes on to change it, you have to let it change you.
Oh, man. So you've just taken us on a whole different conversation. Yeah, no, as I know, but a really good one.
When that information comes in, that your character's not thinking about, oh, my wife and children might be murdered. You're busy trying to convince Malcolm to come and fight, and so your energy, but then you have to realize it all happens so quickly and you don't really think about it, but you have to just be like, take that information as it is when it comes.
Okay, so I'm going to really, because I think that is a really interesting point again for anyone listening to try and just incorporate into how they approach a scene. Work out what the objective of the scene is overall. Mm-hmm. Like what did you arrive in this room for? Why did you ride your horse into this field? Why have you got your sword out as you enter? What's your objective in the scene?
Yeah.
And then play that. But when the whatever it is, left field ball comes in and suddenly you've been told that, your wife and child have just been killed.
Yeah.
Then you respond and tap into that resource that you've got. Don't know it's going to happen and therefore be ready for it.
Yeah.
You have to go with the objective of the scene as it stands with.
And it is hard because obviously everything's rehearsed, and I'm just going to use like messengers, for example. That messenger in that scene comes in and says one line and goes, but they've still got a story. I had a really good messenger in that scene, really good actress who brought something on with her. And before she eats, because there's a, I can't remember exactly how the line goes, but I could see in her face that something's wrong before she even says that that's fucking happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a gift. For me, as the actor, that was a gift because my brain starts going, what is it? Something really shit's happened.
Right.
I can feel my eyes welling up a bit now because you
don't cry. I can't.
I'm not going to cry. Nobody can see that on the podcast. No, but you're getting that information and that realization comes over you because it's changed you and you're allowing that person to change you. That person comes on, oh, your wife's dead. I'm just going to sound like a dramatic actor now, but I'd be fuming with that person. I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just come on and be, oh, by the way, your wife's dead. Not that anyone would do it like that, but you'd be surprised. And people might think that's a really important line. If you're in a massive cast, that actress had other parts in that show, but that might be your only character. If you're in the RSC, that's probably like your only line.
Yeah.
One that a young actor is going to come on and do that as a messenger.
Yeah. And it's not about overplaying your part or overstating your role.
No, don't come on as a messenger and be like, yeah, exactly. You're not come. But just think about how. Say it truthfully. As much as nobody likes to hear this because it means more work and emotional investment for a small part, but that's important. The story is the important thing, right? And that helps tell the story.
It's also important, not just for the actor, for the director, to know, for an amateur director who may be focusing a lot of their energies and efforts onto the parts of, Macbeth, Macduff, whatever, the bigger roles that they feel they're going to get the biggest emotional response and the biggest audience kind of engagement.
Yeah.
They may let a messenger come on and go, yeah, here's a message for you. Oh, shit, sorry, all your families just died.
Yeah.
And they may let that slide, but actually, from a director's point of view, they also need to be thinking that one moment could destroy the whole scene.
Absolutely.